This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 140, where AC and I are going to catch up on all the latest cloud news, recorded live July 29th, 2016. Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft cloud world, including Microsoft Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, the competitive landscape, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Connell.
Send us a tweet either to the show at MS Cloud Show or to Chris at LoungeflyZ.
Or to Andrew at Andrew Connell.
As we'd love to connect with you. We're just two dudes telling you how we see it. The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Valid.nl. Valid is a Microsoft Gold partner whose mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of technology. Valid is always on the lookout for consultants, architects, and engineers. Do you know Azure, BI, and Analytics, .NET, Office 365, or SharePoint? Look them up on Valid.nl. Good morning, sir.
Hey, CJ, how's it going?
Very well, my friend, very well. How are you doing?
Doing good. It's nice to be talking to another American on the show.
Hey.
Exactly. Congratulations, dude.
Thank you. Yeah, for anybody listening, I am probably the oddest sounding American you'll ever meet. Yeah.
No, there's a lot of people in the South that are like that.
I think I'll fit right in, huh? No, for anybody listening, I went through with my naturalization as a U.S. citizen this week. So I'm very excited about that.
Can, just in time to vote in the election.
Exactly, yeah. Well, no, that wasn't the entire reason. A very small part of it. But no, my wife and I are very excited about it. And both of our kids are US citizens, obviously. They were born here and things. So it's nice to not be a little less different from them. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
It's awesome, man.
Anyway, how are you?
I'm doing good.
Yeah.
I'm doing good. It's been...
What's up in your world?
I just got back from I guess 2 weeks of mini vacations. I did a couple days with my in-laws at the beach on the coast of North Carolina. Left there a little bit early, dropped the kids off with my parents who were vacationing at our, I guess you can call it a family compound. I've got about, I'd say maybe a total of like 10 families. We have some property over in the western North Carolina mountains. My parents were there, dropped the kids off there, came out to see you guys and out in Seattle for Jeremy Thake's wedding about, what, 2 weeks ago now?
My liver is still suffering.
and from there, went back and spent some time in the mountains in North Carolina with my family and then dropped my son off at camp. So I'm finally back in the office this week. And I know that, I mean, for our listeners too, we can explain. We had, I know if you listened to the last show and episode 139, we talked about how in this show we were going to do a review of our survey results. And CJ and I did do that. We did record that when I was out there in Seattle. But we had a...
And I have a sad admittance, I suppose. I balked up the recording.
We talked about it for a good 50 minutes, but we only have 3 minutes of it.
Yeah. And you and I were in the same room. It was all good. And then I completely... dropped the ball and ended up exporting the recording from Audition that we were using to record the show. And for whatever reason, probably there was a problem between the keyboard and the chair. I only exported 3.5 minutes of the show and then didn't save the rest. So my apologies, but we will get back to those and do those again, right?
Yeah. So that's why we missed a week, because we didn't realize it until the last minute that we only had 3 minutes of our show. And So then this week we're gonna do a new show, because there's been a boatload of stuff that's come out, and then next week we'll come back and we'll do the survey results.
Yeah, exactly. It was pretty clear in the survey results, to give you a sneak peek, that people loved hearing about the news and staying up to date with what's going on. So we want to make sure that we continue that and that we give the news the time it deserves and what you guys want to hear about. So. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, hey, so what have you been doing other than becoming a U.S. citizen, passing your test and going through the ceremony? What have you been up to the last couple of weeks?
Well, that stuff has been extremely exciting, obviously, and I'm very proud to now be an American, I suppose you can say, yes. But I also have been working, funnily enough, and we released our first product this week, actually. So we're only in beta. So we released the beta of our Hyperfish directory analysis tool. And if you'd signed up for our mailing list, you would have got an email to that. But I'll let listeners in on a wee secret. You can go and try it out at app.hyperfish.com, app.hyperfish.com. And the product is all about going and analyzing your Active Directory or Azure Active Directory and telling you what state the information is in and how up-to-date it is and whether it's missing or inaccurate and things like that. It's a free product. It's sort of step one on our journey towards Ignite with our full product that we're going to come out with at Ignite. So stay tuned for more information on that. But we'd love to have people try it out. It's a beta, so you're going to hit problems, but that's what I've been doing.
Yeah. Hey, I took a look at it yesterday. I love the way it's very clean, really good experience, really simple. And granted, I have a very small directory because it's just a company of one Azure AD, but I love the experience. I thought it was like you guys did a good job with the flow and everything like that. So good job on at least the onboarding process and the initial experience.
Yeah, well, there's a lot more to come, obviously. This is just the beginning. So, but it's nice to have something out there in production that we're seeing people use and getting good feedback on and things like that. So it's been very exciting to get that out.
Very cool. Yeah. So
how about you? What have you been working on?
So I'm working on a little proof of concept for a project that I'm about to embark on that I will be a little less stealthy about on the podcast in the next, I don't know, a few months.
Yep.
But I'm kind of diving into a new technology, but it's not so much we've talked about Docker and stuff on the show, but there's been a lot of kind of implementation stuff that's learning about it academically and actually using it and trying to build an app with it. There's a lot of stuff to learn, a lot of process. And so I'm like a kind of a two-phase or a three-phase proof of concept to get a better idea of how long it's going to take and how to build certain things. So I'm in phase three of it now. First one was just build something, launch it, getting a whole thing like continuous build, going into pushing it out to different hosts and stuff. That was done a couple weeks ago. Last step was to really understand get a couple like multi pieces kind of working together. And then now I'm building a real tool that's part of the proof of concept, which I will launch as a public or a free tool for the product that I'm working on or the project that I'm working on that I'll talk about more in a few months. But this one, the one I'm working on now it's interesting. I just don't want to spend too much detail on it right now as it's still vaporware until it's live. So I'll pump that a bit, but,
That sounds exciting. It's good to it's good to get some stuff done, some code that will be used.
It definitely is, and it's nice to be done with all the personal travel and vacation stuff for the most part. Because it's kind of hard to get work done when you're shuttling around the country with a family.
Oh yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, hey, I saw on Facebook you got to play with a HoloLens.
I did. In fact, I actually have a HoloLens, not mine. It's for a friend that I'm taking to New Zealand in a week and a half or so, or a week and a bit. And he very graciously allowed me to open it up and play with it and take a look. And I am blown away. Like, I am stunned. It is such cool technology. And the device is pretty gawky and silly, right? I think the technology's got to be miniaturized a little bit more. Mm. But man, oh man, augmented reality is in our future. Like, I don't think there's any way around it. I think it is such a cool experience to see things that aren't really there, just sort of around your lounge or your office, or you know, pictures up on the wall or video you can sort of sling up against a wall or what have you. And they've executed it very nicely. Like it's been done pretty well. It's easy to use. I thought the onboarding experience was really good. And it's just a lot of fun. And the applications that I think people are going to write with this are going to be amazing. Like it's going to be really interesting to see what people come up with creatively. I can just see so many possibilities for this technology. And, you know, I thought about it before I tried a HoloLens on and thought through, well, this would be kind of cool for a whole bunch of applications. But when you actually use it, it's, I don't know, it just takes it to a different level. It's like, wow, I can really see how this could be useful. Hmm. But I think the device is really a developer preview. It's not really a consumer or commercial device at this point, in my view. Hmm. It's more of a dev kit, if you will, to start the ecosystem, thinking about scenarios and building applications for augmented reality. But I would love to have one and start. I'd love to have one, and B, I'd love to have more time to actually build something. So I'm just blown away by the tech. I think it's incredible. I don't know how they do it. It's magic.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, I'd love to try that out. no wind, they'll have an opportunity to do that. But that'll be it's definitely something that I'm with you. I mean, you can see the uses for it. It's just going to be, interesting to see what people build with it, and then how the tech itself miniaturizes and gets more to being like, say, putting on sunglasses or something like that. So,
well, there's another guy I know that has one just downstairs in the same building I work in, and I've sort of said to him, hey, we should pop these things on and go sit at the corner Starbucks and see what weird stares we get.
You have your fingers moving around like the clicking and the pinching and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Bloom, and there's a gesture called Bloom, and there's one called which gets you the start menu, so you can open up apps. And there's obviously there's tap and hold and all that sort of stuff. But it's actually really easy to use. Like I think they've done a spectacular job on the user experience.
Yeah, cool.
Anyway, so this show, we were going to talk about some news.
Yes.
We've got a lot to catch up on. We've got some Azure news, or some Microsoft Azure news, obviously, some more cloud news, some Office 365 news, and a few picks by the looks of it. So why don't we get stuck into that? Do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, absolutely. We can jump into this. So I guess we'll start with the Azure news first, and then we'll switch over to cloud news stuff. But the first one that I'm gonna kick off here is with a new Azure billing portal. So what this is that the Azure team, we have a set of billing REST APIs that are available. Today, if you want to get your billing information from Azure, you have to log into the portal and you can download spreadsheets and do all of your own analytics with it. And the next step that Microsoft did is they built these REST APIs, both they're under the billing APIs, which consists of two different APIs. One is about rate card information. So it shows you all the rate information, the billing prices, the metrics, the different pricing breakpoints between different resources that you can purchase from Azure, between different regions and currencies and Azure offers, et cetera. And then they also have one called the consumption or the usage API. And that's going to allow you to download the data or access the data of how much stuff you've used. You can see summary results. You can see detailed results to do all of your own metrics. What the Azure team, that's been around for a little while. Those APIs are in preview. And I've done some work with those. I think I talked about on the podcast a few weeks ago. But now what they've done is they've released a billing portal, which is not something that you can go play with. Instead, what it is a project that's up on GitHub that you can clone, make a few tweaks to it, and then launch it yourself in Azure. And what it does is it will go out and pull down your data once a day, or I think it's the schedule set to once a day using a web job. And it uses a Power BI dashboard, an embedded Power BI dashboard, for you to do a lot of analytics and slicing and dicing of what your Azure usage is. But this is one of those like self-hosted kind of things, but it's also a really good code sample for you to pull down to see how things are done. Really cool charts and graphs that are in there. Really cool little tool here. So we'll have a link to it in the show notes where you can go take a look at it.
Yep.
Cool little addition.
Nice. Yeah, that'll be really interesting to see, to get a bit more insight into how you're using your subscriptions and things and where your money's going.
Yeah, definitely.
We've got some news about Azure Stack. Azure Stack is obviously parts of Azure and the ability to run those on-premises. So it's out in technical preview 1 right now, I think. Microsoft announced it a wee while back. But there have been some delays. So I think they're bumping the availability, or they're saying sometime in mid-2017 or something along those lines, which is kind of a bit of a sad piece of news, for want of a better word. But they're also announcing that the GA release will be combined software and hardware. So it'll be available from integrated hardware partners and the support that comes with that, rather than just download and install on your own kit, as I understand it, which will make it... I think what they're getting at with this is that you're going to have a better experience if you do it on hardware that's kind of been certified, I suspect, sort of pre-validated and certified. So versus, you know, throwing it on a bunch of random boxes that you've got lying around. But I actually think it's a bit of a step backwards because, you know, some people have already got standardized hardware and things like that that they deploy, and asking them to go and buy hardware from either a different vendor or a specific piece of kit to run the stuff just seems like a bit of a step backwards to me. Not quite as flexible, but who knows? I mean, I'm not a infrastructure guy. Maybe it's no big deal.
Yeah, it does seem like they're kind of taking, they're kind of backtracking a little bit, because I thought that the promise of Azure Stack was run it on your own hardware, but there was never that asterisk saying your own hardware, but we're going to tell you which hardware you should buy to be able to do it.
Well, I mean, it will be your hardware once you buy it, right?
Right. And that's what I say. It's like an asterisk on there. Or like, what are you going to do? Now you're going to lease it. Now someone's going to say, well, we can lease your own Azure stack in your inside of our cloud. It's like, well, wait a minute. Why am I not doing Azure?
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, I mean, so it, essentially the way it boils down to is that, you know, if you were planning on taking Azure stack and you're putting it on your own servers and stuff, that's not going to be... it doesn't look like that's going to be an option. It looks like you've got to go with their recommended approach, which, I mean, that's the way that they went with Windows Home Server years ago. And I don't know, like you said, like you're saying, it's a little disappointing, but you know, at least it's still an option for you to have a private cloud with a lot of the same Azure capabilities.
Yeah.
So
yeah, they also hinted at another technical preview coming later this year, which will be interesting to watch out for.
Mm, very cool.
Yeah.
So I've got one here about the Microsoft Authenticator app. So this is actually, there was a blog post on July the 25th, and it's one of the very few times that we see Microsoft announce something from Azure that is coming like in a few weeks. Instead, they usually say, as of today, it's this. There's a new Microsoft Authenticator app that's going to be coming out for your mobile devices on August the 15th. So we have an Authenticator app out there right now from Microsoft for authenticating with Azure AD. But what Microsoft is doing is they're going and pushing a brand new one out. Now, to me, this looks a lot like some of the other authenticator apps that are already out there in terms of the UI and stuff. But what's interesting about this one is that this is also going to add like multi-factor auth support for Microsoft accounts, not just Azure AD accounts, but Microsoft accounts. So if you've got one of those at Live or at Hotmail or at Outlook accounts,
yeah,
you'll be able to use the MFA app with that as well. It's, you know, it's interesting because now we're starting to see multiple authenticator apps coming out, and it's a little, you know, what I've noticed is that between these different apps and between these different services that are out there, you're not going to be able to just get away with just having one of these authenticator apps. You've got to have multiple. So like I used to use the Google Authenticator app, then I switched over to Authy, and now I'm using one from LastPass. Mm. I like the LastPass one because if I'm going to log into LastPass, it actually communicates with LastPass so that if I go to log in on the LastPass website and it says, now you need to enter the code in. Well, if I look at my phone and I use my fingerprint to sign in, I don't have to put a code in. It just has a button that pops up saying, yes, approve it or not.
Gotcha. That's the same as the way the Azure one works, or the Microsoft one, yeah. I used to use it in its previous incarnation while I was at Microsoft. And when you go turn on multi-factor authentication in Office 365, you use the Azure Authenticator app, or I think they've renamed it Microsoft Authenticator. But anyway, and it would send a push notification to your phone, which you tap, and then it would open the app, obviously, and you can click, you know, accept or authenticate or whatever. There was no dual keying of codes or anything like that. It was just push notification, one tap, and you're in. It was pretty sweet.
Yeah. So now Microsoft's got one that's coming out. We'll work with Azure AD. And this has nothing to do with the Microsoft one, but I've even noticed how some sites, the multi-factor auth stuff doesn't work so well. Like, for example, I have to use Authy or the Google Authenticator to do multi-factor auth with Slack, with Slack Teams, because like the LastPass one uses the domain as the unique identifier. And on the domain, when you're logging into Slack, it's always at Slack. It's always something at the subdomain.slack.com. And so every time I went there and I added another team to the LastPass one, it kept overwriting the last one and I'd lose the ability to log in. So now I'm using three different MFA apps. I'm using the Microsoft one for Azure. I'm using LastPass for everything else. And then I'm using Authy or Google Authenticator for Slack.
Gotcha.
So anyway,
gotcha.
The news here is that Microsoft's got their own coming out on August the 15th. So for Azure AD, and it's also for combined auth and stuff. So it looks from the link that we'll put in the show notes here from the blog post announcement, it's really well done. It's definitely an improvement from the existing one that's already out.
Yeah, for sure. It's a must-have for Office 365 customers, in my view.
Yeah, agreed.
Hey, we've got some DocumentDB protocol support coming for Mongo and expanded region support for that. So I think we talked about it on the show a couple of episodes ago, maybe during the build episode that we did, the build news. The DocumentDB now supports protocol or wire level support for MongoDB. So this means that you can use MongoDB libraries in your code to talk to DocumentDB for the most part. So some NoSQL database action in your apps. And so they came out with that. They announced that at build. They announced that it was out in preview. but they've updated the preview and they're rolling it out to all document DB regions. So it used to be, I think, only like West or something like that, US West.
Before it was only private preview.
I was only private preview before. I didn't realize it was a public preview. Interesting.
Yeah, you had to opt into it. You had to request it and then get opted into it. This is the big thing here. This is a public preview.
I see. That's nice. So, and also across all the regions that DocDB is available. So you can go start playing around with it if you're in different areas of Azure that DocDB is in.
Yep.
Pretty nice. Very cool. This is really cool for developers, like especially for non-Microsoft developers who are trying to integrate their, you know, document DB into their applications that might be on something like PHP or Node or something like that.
Well, if you were building an application that was using Mongo for your data store, which is a NoSQL database, and if you wanted to host that inside of Azure, there really is not a good option for hosting Mongo inside of Azure. There's a couple third-party providers that do it. They're not cheap. Or you've got to do it inside your own virtual machine or in your own containers. And this is nice because now, without really any code changes to your application, you can have the application think that it's talking to Mongo, but really your connection string is pointing to a hosted data service that's DocumentDB, that you don't have to worry about the scale and the backup and restore and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
it's a really cool story.
Certainly means, I think migrating will make, you know, it makes migrating a whole bunch more realistic as well.
Yeah, agreed.
So should we move on to some cloud news, some non-Microsofty cloud news?
Yeah, I guess there's one bit of Microsofty news in this, but man, this is we are in quarterly earning reports and apparently acquisitions. So we got three bits of news here around the quarterly results for the three big public clouds, or at least the companies behind the three big public clouds. And we've got one though that this is, man, talk about a change in the time. So on July the 25th, or at least it was announced on July the 25th, after a month-long bidding process, Yahoo has agreed to sell a significant portion of its business over to Verizon. So for $4.83 billion in cash, Verizon is going to acquire Yahoo's core business, which includes the advertising, content, search, and mobile activities. And this is going to get added to the fact that Verizon, about a little over a year ago, they purchased AOL. So Verizon is, you know, changing from just being just an ISP, an ISP and a mobile company, to being a much, much bigger online powerhouse that now has content and advertising and search. This is a really interesting move by Verizon. I think that one of the things that really shows that this is a significant change in the times here, right? So I saw this image floating around on a page on Facebook that I follow called The Game of Codes. 1998, Yahoo refused to buy Google for $1 million. 4 years later, yep, they realized their mistake and they tried to buy Google for $3 billion. So from $1 million to $3 billion. And Google said, try $5 billion. Yahoo said, no thanks. Then 6 years later, in 2008, Yahoo refused to be sold to Microsoft for $40 billion. And now 8 years after that, they agree to be sold for $4.6 billion to Verizon, or $4.83 billion to Verizon. So in 8 years...
Yeah.
Yahoo refused to be sold to Microsoft for $40, but they then, 8 years later, agreed to sell to Verizon for about $35 billion less.
Yeah, so the interesting thing behind that that I honestly don't know the answer to, right? But in the sale to Verizon for the 4.3 or whatever it is, it doesn't include the Alibaba stakes and Yahoo Japan, right? And they reckon that that might be worth like $31 or $32 billion just by itself. So was the Microsoft offer back at 40-something billion or whatever it was, did that include Alibaba and Yahoo Japan stuff back then? Because if it was, then it's not so big a difference, right?
I don't know.
I don't know if it included those back then. Let's assume not, and they're now worth a tenth of what they were.
I think that when Microsoft was trying to buy them, they were trying to buy out their entire business. I don't think it was just where, because I think that it's only until the last year that Melissa Meyer at Yahoo, they decided that they were going to start selling. I think it was maybe a couple months ago or a year or so ago, Yahoo decided they were going to sell off part of their company, and they wanted to sell off the Alibaba portion that they retained. And all the shareholders came back and said, that's the one part of Yahoo that's actually worth something. So then they pivoted and said, all right, well, let's sell everything else. And now they're selling everything else. So now Yahoo is really just, I mean, is Yahoo really just a stakeholder in Alibaba? Is that really all they are? Are they just essentially like a hedge fund?
Pretty much. They've got their patent portfolio, which they're not selling as well. So there are a few things like that. So I don't know what will happen with the company.
And it just looks weird. So I don't know. Looks really strange. So yeah. So what? Last year, Verizon bought AOL for $4.4 billion. This year, they buy pretty much all the core business of Yahoo for $4.8 billion. So for about little over like $9.5 billion, Verizon's just become a massive internet powerhouse.
Yeah.
More so than they were.
I guess desperate times call for desperate measures, and telecommunications companies, commodity, boring pipes. And now they've got to do something different. And this looks like a move in that direction, right? They want to just get out of the business of providing pipes and providing content and value-add services to their subscribers and all that sort of stuff. So, it's an interesting move. I don't know how it's going to work out, but it's ballsy.
It's definitely ballsy. Hey, this next one, you with your history, you do a better job of picking apart Microsoft numbers here. So I know last week they released. So why don't you give us a little bit, little bit more of an insight into Microsoft's quarterly numbers?
Yeah, so their Q4 earnings came in and they did pretty well. They did $22.6 billion in revenue, which is about 69 cents per earnings per share, I should say, which is pretty decent. There were some good numbers in here, especially around their cloud numbers in terms of revenue. They split it out by these divisions of, you know, that Satya has put in place, like productivity and business processes, intelligent cloud, more personal computing, and then, you know, corporate and other. But there were some good areas of growth. So productivity and business process up about 5%, which is, that's where all of the Office 365 numbers go. Intelligent cloud, that's basically Azure and that sort of thing, 7%, which is pretty decent. And then more personal computing, down 4%, which is, this is where Windows, Xbox, phone, all that sort of stuff goes. So that's been declining ever so slightly over time, which is kind of what you'd expect with the way Windows is going and things like that. But that's I don't think that's too bad a result. You know, it's not the 20-something percent growth that we're seeing from Google and things like that. But from a business that's changing from predominantly one-time purchase software and EAs, I suppose, to cloud subscription revenue, it's doing a pretty decent job of it. It beat the earnings expectations from the street, which is always good, obviously. And their stock's up pretty nicely. I can't remember exactly what they're up. They went up to like $57 for a while there. I think they've dropped down more recently in the last few days. Oh no, they're $56.48 today, which is almost as high as it's ever been in the foreseeable past. Hmm. But yeah, pretty decent.
Yeah, I think the point you said there, I think this is the part that's really impressive to me. I totally agree with what you're saying about how the company has been really reinventing itself. And as a company that big, where all of your revenue is really banked on personal computing and selling licenses and stuff and switching over to subscription-based, it's really impressive to see that not only are they doing a good job of this transition from their bottom line, but they're actually moving in the right direction. They're actually growing here. So for perspective, because I think this always is a good idea to see what the financial guys are expecting from the company and what we actually see the real results here. We'll see the same thing in the next two that we talk about. Wall Street expected Microsoft to come in with revenue of $22.17 billion when they actually came in at $22.6. So that's about $450 million more than what they were expected to pull in. But here's the big one too. So they were expecting earnings per share to be 58 cents per share, and they came in at 69. So they beat it by 11 cents, which is a significant jump.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
Now, when you look at the earnings per share piece of it, to me, it just shows usually companies are doing really good when they beat earnings per share by like a penny or by 2 pennies. And Microsoft did it here by 11 cents. So that's a big deal. All right. So
yeah,
that's a big, good company for them, or good quarter, very good quarter for them. And they talked a little bit here about how some things had changed from the previous quarter of the same year where they had the big write down with Nokia and So
there's some good numbers in here. Azure revenue grew 102%, which is pretty decent. Its commercial cloud business has a new run rate revenue number of $12 billion, up from $10 billion or $9.4 billion that they reported in Q3. So that's incredible growth. It just added over $2 billion in run rate, which is their expected earnings over the next 12 months if things go the way they're currently going, which is pretty decent. And they also said, well, they're sticking by their plan to reach $20 billion run rate by 2018 for their commercial cloud business, which is predominantly Office 365.
That's where LinkedIn's getting added too, right? Because they have when LinkedIn gets purchased, that's they're going into the commercial cloud with the whole dynamic stuff.
I assume so.
And I think that they're like 3 billion commercial run rate, so that'll be a nice little bump there as well. So from 12 to 15.
Yeah, absolutely. They said for productivity and business process, which includes the Office 365 stuff, 7 billion compared to 6.3 billion same time last quarter, which is pretty decent growth, and 54% year-over-year growth in Office 365 commercial revenue. So that's charging. Mm. Like that's going really nicely.
Growing at a rate of 2.5 times year-over-year.
Yeah. Can you imagine the people behind the scenes there scrambling and plugging in more hard drives?
It's a full-time job, just scaling, just constantly scaling up. So
yeah, incredible. So yeah, they did a pretty decent result there, and I'm glad to see their cloud stuff is really leading the way.
Absolutely. So Microsoft's biggest competitor, I'd say, on the cloud or Azure space there is Amazon or Amazon Web Services. And they, as TechCrunch said, Amazon absolutely shattered earnings expectations. This came out on July the 28th, yesterday, or I guess July the 27th. Is when it came out, and they had some adjustments on the reporting that came out. Their earnings per share were expected to be $1.11 per share. Amazon blew that away with $1.78, so 67 cents above what Wall Street was forecasting. Wall Street expected them to pull in $29.55 billion, where they pulled in $30.4 billion, so almost a full $1 billion more. Mm. And it's pretty impressive. You know, see, net sales were up over 31%. Net income was up $857 million. Big jump from last year's $92 million. So you're seeing a lot of things of all of these years with Amazon was spending on, you know, having very being very unprofitable, but spending a lot for growth. We're starting to see the actual return on that. They said that they expected their revenue for the third quarter to be anywhere from $31 to $33 billion, which is up another $2 to $4 billion here, and their operating income was forecasted to be anywhere from a huge range here, from $50 to $650 million. So what we're doing, we're seeing things like, you know, Amazon, we're seeing things like Microsoft, these public clouds, really seeing them grow quite a bit. They're on a really good, really positive numbers, which is definitely good for the economy for in the U.S. here, but it's definitely good to show that companies are really just investing more and more on this public cloud.
Absolutely. Well, in third place, we've got Google, right? So we've got Amazon, then Microsoft, then Google in terms of public cloud leaders. And their results also came in, and they're doing pretty well as well. They saw a massive bump, or a pretty decent bump, in advertising revenue. They generated $21.5 billion in revenue, and they beat Wall Street expectations on earnings per share of $8.42. So they got a nice share increase, 5% after hours, I think it was, which was pretty decent. But the interesting thing with these guys is their cloud revenue, they don't split it out, right? So that, and it's pretty small fry in comparison to others. So they lump it in into their other revenue section. So their Google Cloud Platform stuff is lumped in with things like Google Play and a few other services in the other revenue section. So it's kind of doesn't reek of priority to me. But nonetheless, it's obviously growing. It jumped up 33% in growth to $2.1 billion in revenue. They don't split it out, whether that's cloud services, you know, like Google Cloud Platform or Google Play or what have you. It's all lumped in together. So $2.1 billion for that. But yeah, it's kind of dwarfed a little bit in that, in terms of Amazon, who's kind of number one, who does split out their cloud revenue number of $2.9 billion in revenue for the quarter. So it's hard to know exactly how much Microsoft and and Google are making on Azure and on Google Cloud Platform, because it's kind of hidden away a little bit. But Amazon is a bunch more clearer about it at 2.9.
The article that we'll link to on TechCrunch was that the big thing that TechCrunch takes a position on here is talks about how their core business, and we're saying Google, and they keep using Alphabet, which Alphabet is really the parent company of all Google. Everything that we used to call Google, we now really should call it Alphabet. I know that that's true. That's not exactly true, but Google is an Alphabet company, and it's just it's a reporting thing. So one of the things that's interesting about this is they really focus a lot on the advertising business, because that's really the core revenue stream for Google or for Alphabet. And when you look at it in the context of Facebook, who also announced ridiculous numbers this week as well, that Facebook is their advertising is growing at a rate of about 60% year over year, but Google is not seeing that same kind of growth. I think that they're up somewhere from about they're around 11% year over year, they're up 21% year over year compared to the second quarter of last year. So they're not growing as at the same rate. But then again, they're also not nearly as young of a company as Facebook is, especially from their mobile experience. So we're seeing Google definitely grow seeing Facebook grow at a much faster rate. But still, both companies are showing that the advertising model inside Google and in Facebook is still just huge.
Absolutely. So, yeah, it's a big deal.
No.
Excellent. So should we move on to some Office 365 news?
Absolutely. First one here is we were talking about Facebook. We got a little bit of Facebook and 365 news.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was announced at WPC? Yeah, was it WPC? Which was a couple of weeks back now in Toronto, that Facebook are on Office 365 for mail and calendar for the most part. I'm pretty sure they're not using Yammer.
You think?
Probably not. Yeah, but yeah, they're which is really cool. And I think it's great that Facebook have moved to Office 365 for email and calendar and so forth. They obviously didn't want to move to Google Apps, and I think it's good evidence for Office 365 that it's okay as a cool Valley company to use Office 365.
Absolutely.
Because most of them use Google Apps, as I understand it, down there. So
another bit of news here from Office 365 is that on July the 15th, it's funny because this is the day we talked about this in the show that we lost. So this is a couple weeks old, but Office 365 launched a new thing called the Office 365 Network. And the idea here is that this is an online community to bring together IT pros, tech experts, product enthusiasts, Office 365 customers, basically bring everybody together in one spot to be able to talk about Office 365 and to be able to support each other and to ask questions and get things answered. This is going to eventually replace the Yammer Office 365 IT Pro Network or the Office 365 Network. They say they do this for a couple different reasons. You and I have our thoughts in it. So let me first just tell you like what they said that they're planning on doing, that they are going to turn off the Office 365 Network on September the 1st of 2016. All the content's going to be going over to network.office 365. And this is really where they want everybody to go. And the reason why they're doing it is because the old Yammer network was a place for, like, you had to have an account to be able to get into it, to be able to browse it. It wasn't indexed by things like Google or Bing, so it was hard to see the content. My two cents on it is that I asked some questions to some people that we're friends with at Microsoft about this, and they chimed in on some questions that I had asked on Facebook and stuff. But my two cents on this is that this really, the part that really rubs me the wrong way on this is that Microsoft for so many years, or Office 365 specifically, for so many years has been forcing Yammer down our throats and saying, this is the place you should be having your conversations. And then they turn right around and say, nope, don't use Yammer. We're going to go use something else. Why are they doing that? Well, the answer they gave is that, well, it wasn't indexable. It wasn't really built for millions of users, being Yammer. It wasn't built for millions of users. It wasn't built to be able to, you know, have stuff out in the open like this. I don't know. The thing that irritates me about this is one of the exact same reasons that irritates me about, you know, what you hear about this new dev model that we get with the SharePoint framework or other stuff with Office 365. And That is that the office group just doesn't seem to know how to finish stuff. They always seem to just kind of say, well, this doesn't work, so let's scrap it and let's start something brand new. And let's scrap this and let's start brand new. Or let's just stop investing in this and let's do something brand new. Instead of really just saying, let's finish it. Let's actually fix it. If it had an issue with millions of users, scale it. Let's face it, SharePoint wasn't built to be for millions of users, yet you're using it in Office 365. Exchange wasn't originally built for that as well, but you're doing it. Why is it that we always seem to see that it just shows that this lack of commitment, and it shows that they don't seem to know how to finish or have the appetite to finish off something and to address the hard problems of a limitation of an acquisition or something like that. And instead, they just decide to pivot and say, let's just go with something totally different. Now, I'm not saying you got to stick in the mud. You can't evolve and innovate and stuff like that. I think that that's a good thing to be able to do those things. But I think that what is frustrating about it is that you just don't see that follow through with different things. And this just shows yet again that this is what the Office 365 team does. So,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I get why they moved. I never liked Yammer for this thing. It was a pain to get into. Couldn't search for answers on the internet for it. And I understand that Yammer didn't want to turn Yammer into a sort of a public forum tool for what it was trying to be used for. So I understand why they moved. I just think the execution was a bit poor. Like, the content hasn't been migrated, people haven't been migrated, all that sort of stuff. So it's probably not the best execution, but I can understand why they did it in some respects.
Yeah.
Anywho, we also got news about modern lists being rolled out into SharePoint Online in Office 365. So much like we've seen with groups and things like that, they're starting to sort of slowly evolve the user interface for SharePoint in a few different places. And actually, weirdly, I got a sneak peek of this at the dev kitchen that I went to. The tenant that I had this already enabled. And so I was like, huh, look at that. Those have changed. And then the news popped out this week that it's being rolled out to first release customers. And it's just basically a revamped list UI over the top of SharePoint lists, a bit more web-friendly and so forth, a bit more responsive, things like that. It's got Microsoft Flow integration and Power Apps integration built in. But it is SharePoint lists under the hood. Nothing's really changed there. But the editing experience is a bit nicer. It's got some nice quick editing features, adding columns, filling out data, all that sort of stuff has been scrubbed up and polished. So it's nice to have a new UI over the top, but it is SharePoint lists under the hood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just seems like I know I'm minimizing it a bit, but to me, it's a lot like the modern libraries or modern document libraries. It just feels like a reskinning. It doesn't feel like it's that big of a deal.
Yeah, I mean, it is just reskinning, right?
There's some new capabilities that you can do with it, like with Flow integration and Power Up integration, but it just looks a little different. And lists now look a lot more like document libraries.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, it's a good improvement. There are definitely improvements in innovating in that area on lists and document libraries. But yeah, it just seems like it's getting a lot more like, hey, look at this. But anyway. Another thing that we have here is the Microsoft Stream. So Microsoft Stream announced coming to Office 365. It's a preview. What this is a new business video service that makes it easier to access video and content in your organization. Mm. Now, here's the funny part. Quoting straight from their blog post, Microsoft Stream builds on the learnings and success on Office 365 video, and over time, the two experiences will converge, making Stream the de facto video experience for Office 365. Wasn't I just saying something about like going to a brand new service and not like innovating and actually finishing off the previous one?
You're 100% right.
I don't get it. It's video, and I don't know.
Yeah, so the internal politics behind this is that the video portal was built by the SharePoint team as part of Office 365, and this new Stream thing was built by the Azure team. And there was a bit of a pissing match going on behind the scenes. And Azure Media team and everything wanted to own video experiences. And so they went and built this portal. And as I understand it, that's what happened. And so, yeah, that's how it all sort of transpired. But to customers, it makes no sense.
No, I don't get it. I that's the thing. You get the closer you get to Microsoft, and if you're in Microsoft, I get that you have like different companies inside that are, you know, competing and stuff. But from like standing back here, the customer's like going, I don't care. It's from Microsoft. It's supposed to be one product.
Yeah, and it's a little odd. Anyway, yeah. Hey, speaking of another odd thing, Microsoft bookings.
I like this.
I'm so confused. Like, I'm so confused. It seems so random to me. Like, I mean, I get it. I get that. I can say I'm confused, and then I get it. I get the application, right? So Microsoft Bookings is about, as a small business owner, maybe you've got a hair salon or a lawn mowing company or a something that, you know, massage therapy or whatever it happens to be, and you want customers to make bookings with you. So now there's a new bookings portal as part of Office 365. People can come in and pick the time slot they want and make a booking, and then it reminds them and all of that sort of stuff. And it's just odd. Like, there are loads of services that do this, and I'm just perplexed about what value this brings to Office 365. Like, who's going to use that? Who's going to switch to this? If you're a hair salon, you've already got a booking system. If you're a lawn mowing company, maybe you don't. Maybe you're on paper and pen or something. So maybe it's valuable to those folks. But I'm not going to switch booking systems from a sort of best in breed for my particular type of industry, whether that's, let's put it this way. If you go into a hair salon and take a look at what they use on their computer, it's crappy old software, but they use it flawlessly every day. It's completely bulletproof, and it works for their workflow precisely. And I just can't see that being the case for this one.
Yeah, I think the scenarios that they gave in the blog post are a little interesting. It's funny because this is a product idea that I had a couple of years ago that I was going to build out. I'm glad I didn't, but I was going to build this to be, you know, be nice to have an easy way for people to be able to add stuff to my calendar for time ranges that I wanted to make myself available.
Well, now that I understand, right?
Yeah, but you could use it for that, but the way that they pitch it, it's not, I totally agree with you. It's like, I'm not going to use it for like a hair salon or for, you know, integration with the other companies that we have today. It's more for like an independent kind of a thing. Like, if I wanted to go through and book a meeting with you and looking for like podcast times, I could say, well, why don't you go through and give me a range during your week when you could record podcasts, and I can do the same. And so when we're trying to book somebody to do an interview, then I can easily look at yours and say, I can see when he's available, because that app is looking at your calendar and showing me when you have free blocks in the range that you said was available. That was the plan that I was going to build. I saw this and I'm going, well, that's exactly what I was going to build. But
yeah, I get it for that scenario for sure. I just don't think businesses are going to move over from package they already use to this, and something that is not Microsoft's core business and they're not going to build their business on. And so I'd be seriously concerned about this being a one-shot thing and then abandoned.
Really, with Microsoft? You're kidding me. You're really afraid of that?
With random things that are not core business, yes.
Sorry, that might have been my outside voice. The microphone picked me up.
Well, I don't think they're going to, let's put it this way, I don't think they're going to ditch Office 365, but no. It wouldn't surprise me if they ditch bookings eventually. Like, I just don't see it being that important to them.
Yeah. Want to do some picks?
Yeah, let's wrap it up and do some picks.
All right. How about that? You want to do your... I can do all three of mine real quick, or you can do yours.
I'll get mine out of the way because yours are way cooler.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, so Microsoft has released API guidelines, and they're actually pretty good. So believe it or not, if you go to GitHub, to the Microsoft organization in GitHub, there is a repo called API-guidelines. This was an internal, I guess, V team across the company with contributors like Mark Rasinovich, Rob Howard, those kinds of guys from all different sort of teams across Microsoft. And they've published it. And it's actually reasonable. It's all about their REST guidelines, REST API guidelines, and what guidelines they're trying to follow with implementing things like the Microsoft Graph and some of the principles that they're using. And it's actually nice that they've published it for people that want to take a look at them. And I showed it to the team here at Hyperfish, and they were like, wow, it actually covers a bunch of scenarios and is a pretty good guide. So definitely go check that out. That's one of my API picks, the Microsoft API guidelines. The second one is there's a great article on how to run an Elasticsearch cluster in Azure using a resource or an ARM template. And if you don't know what Elasticsearch is, it's all about chucking data in a big thing that indexes it and being able to query over it really quick, basically. That's my explain it like us five thing. But it's actually pretty tough to get up and running. So there's a new Azure Marketplace ARM template that you can use. It's got a bunch of configuration options, spin up a ton of nodes, deploy it into an existing network in Azure, dial up the nodes and start pumping data into it. It's pretty sweet. So if you want to get started, that's definitely the way to go.
All right. So my picks, I've got three picks here. I'm going to finish with the coolest one. So these are all space. I know, such a shocker. The first one here is an article by Wired. It talks about how NASA has done a firmware update to the Curiosity rover, so that now the rover can fire its laser at will. So essentially, what this does is, before, they used to have to take the rover, when it would find a rock, they would send instructions to it to fire its laser at the rock and to be able to analyze what the results of that fire was all about, to get, you know, what the composition of the rock was and stuff like that. After doing this, I believe they've done it something like 1,500 times over, or 15,000 times, one of the two, a lot of times. They were able to do a little bit of machine learning, put it inside the software, and now when it finds something, it knows that it can just go ahead and fire at the rock at will and collect the results and send it back to NASA.
That's pretty sweet. It's got a 007 license.
Exactly, yeah. And hopefully they're going to integrate this in with the new, my second pick, is that they have finished the design specs for its sensor-packed Mars 2020 rover. So they are going to launch another rover up to Mars in 2020. And they've published the specs of what this is going to look like. They're reusing a bunch of sensors to save money and to save size and weight and everything. But yeah, I got another rover that's going to be sent up to Mars fairly soon.
That's pretty cool.
And now,
I think you've got to develop stuff that's used that far in advance.
I think it's so cool. I'd love to meet some of the people that are on that. I know that those are mostly JPL guys, the Jet Propulsion Lab over in Pasadena, California. But yes, I'd love to talk to some of the software guys over there responsible for maintaining it and the updates and how it ships. I'd love to go to a meetup or just a presentation on what do you guys have to deal with that's just different. I think it'd be cool.
Yeah.
Hey, my last one here. This one is really cool. This is a Kickstarter. I'm just going to start off with the fact that this one has a pledged goal, or they were looking for pledges of up to $11,000. They have 16 days left. It's funded up to $170,000 already, including yours truly is also a backer.
Very nice.
Here's what's cool about this. The title of it, Apollo 11 Flight Plan Reused. The byline to it, or the whole details about it?
Reissue, right?
I'm sorry, reissue.
Yep.
The flight plan was a minute-by-minute timeline of activities for the Apollo 11 crew. We are reproducing this plan perfectly. It is a beautiful book that they are building, and it is going to be detailed from line by line for the entire Apollo 11 mission and the flight plan, so that you can go back. You'll be able to look at all what the schedule was. You can see the drawings of how things were supposed to be done. This, I saw this on the same day that I saw an image get posted, start floating around on Reddit. That was, I just blanked on his name, but the guy that was in the command module, not the lunar module, and he took a picture of the lunar module as it was descending down to the moon with Earth in the background. And it said that this is the only picture that's ever been taken where it was taken by a human with every single known living and dead human is in front of them.
Yeah, Michael Collins.
Michael Collins, that's right, thank you.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool picture. It's amazing to think the only person not in that photo is him.
Yeah, that's how they said it. There was only one person that was not in the photo, dead or alive.
Yeah, that is either living or has ever lived. Isn't that amazing?
If only he knew about a thing called a selfie at the time, that would have been cool.
And he could have got everybody, yeah. Hey, a selfie in space must be a little easier, I guess. But anyway, holding up a heavy Hasselblad camera in microgravity would be probably a bit easier.
Absolutely.
Yeah, take my money. That's all I'm going to say. Have it all. Don't tell the wife. I hope she's not listening. But honey, if you are, thank you.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely.
That's pretty sweet, dude.
Yeah, man. So if you back the project, they will begin shipping it in December of 2016. So you should get it early
December. In the... December. Ooh, my birthday. Excellent. I love that idea.
That's a great idea. I'm backing it. I'm going to get one.
Perfect.
It's a high quality print, Mylar printing and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I got the NASA design standards manual that was done, and it's pretty cool. It's really cool. Like it's a nice book for reference, and I just love the NASA brand, the worm brand, not the meatball that they currently have. Yeah. But the brand before this one, and logo and typeface, and the standards manual is a work of art. It's absolutely beautiful. So I'm looking forward to this one too.
Awesome.
Hey, SE, thanks for the show. Man. We will catch everybody again next week. We promised to talk about our survey results and cover some of the stuff that we balked up or I balked up in our previous recording. So stay tuned for that.
Awesome. Thanks, CJ. Good day today.
Cheers, SE.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide us a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes for each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading to our website and entering your email to interact with us. Participate in upcoming interviews and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.